With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora, nau mai, haere mai, and welcome to another edition of Aotearoa Rugby Pod. And what is a very sad time for New Zealand and world rugby with the unexpected passing, tragic passing of Chiefs and Māori All Blacks winger Sean Wainui. I haven't dealt with them a lot, but people on our panel have, and there's Bryn Hall in from Christchurch, and of course James Parsons in Auckland. And Bryn, a deeply sad moment for everyone who knows him.
Yeah, it is, mate. It's tough any time you hear devastating news of what we've heard around Sean. And, you know, first and foremost, you know, I want to send my love to the Wainui family. Grew up with his brother Luke, and you know, I've known Sean for a very long time, and ended up knowing his parents and his extended family, and then to his beautiful wife Paige and his beautiful kids. You know, and the sad news, you hope to think that, you know, nothing else will happen, and thankfully, you know, they're safe. And it's just really unfortunate for a guy like Sean who, is such a great man. Just went into from being a young Māori kid, being really rough around the edges, and then you know, spending a lot of time with him growing up during the schoolboy system, and then at the Crusaders spending a bit of time with him, and then throughout the Māori campaigns, anytime I got to connect him, he was such a lovely man. And and I knew how much his family meant to him, and with Paige and those kids, and how much it meant to him. So yeah, I just want to send my condolences to everybody that knows Sean, and we're all thinking of him, and just really fortunate that I got to meet a lovely man, and was part of such a beautiful family. And you know, rest in peace, Shorty boy.
What was the essence of Sean, Brenner? Like, what made him so special?
Just, yeah, whatever you saw with him was how he was. He wore his heart on his sleeve, and you know, was really massive around his Māori culture, and whenever we're in the Māori culture or the Māori team. You know, he was a massive advocate around that. You know, he loved being Māori. He loved talking about his heritage and where he'd come from. And then just through the time knowing him, you know, when we were younger, it was a little bit rough around the edges. But, you know, that was what I loved about Sean. And then meeting his beautiful partner, Paige, and having his kid, his little boy as well, and his kids, and seeing that growth in his development and how he was as a person. So it's in life, you know, every time you evolve and you continue to be a better person of yourself. And I was really fortunate to see Sean from a young, really young age, and then to be able to see a great family man, and had so much love for his family and his kids, which, you know, it just comes back to how much of a great person that he was.
And James, a hell of a rugby player.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I was on the receiving end of some of his brilliance. One of the memories I have, there was an offload that sort of went towards his feet, and he sort of hacky sacked the ball back up to himself and scored a pretty crucial try against the Blues when we were having a fierce battle down in Hamilton. And I think the other testament to Sean is, I suppose, how wide-reaching his touch has been. It certainly impacted the whole rugby community, and everyone's thinking of his whānau and his family and his friends in this tough time.
Yeah, Bryn, you played a lot with him. You know, what did he bring as a footy player? What was the difference between him and other players you played with his skills on the field and the things he could do?
Oh, just reliable, real consistent. Such a consistent player. You know, wasn't the most fastest guy, but you knew a guy that would always do his homework, understand what his role is within a game, and was tough as well. You know, had some really tough ball carries, was a great ball carrier, and defensively as well. He had some real good physicality around putting shots on, and, you know, being that kind of talisman of that defensive leader and trying to get teams into the game, us into the game, due to his defensive pressure. So those are the things that I definitely saw with Sean. But for me, I think just his growth around him getting better as a rugby player, and had such a growth mindset, which not, you know, a lot of players do have. And you know, Sean was definitely one of those guys that had that ability, wanting to grow consistently as a rugby player and wanting to get better, which is, you know, that's probably the reason why he was a professional rugby player for so many years and so many teams.
Yeah. And I suppose it's one of those things, such young men, such huge futures ahead of them. You know, we've seen a few pass recently. We had Jerry pass too soon, Sione pass too soon. Now we've had Sean pass too soon. Chipper, what does the rugby community do to get through this? You know, what will the Players Association do to help everyone carry on through such a tragedy?
Oh, it's not just about the Players Association. I think it's a collaborative approach with his teams he's involved in, and NZR, and they'll make sure that, you know, there's good support networks and systems put across the rugby community to make sure everyone's looked after from an individual point of view and an organisation-wide point of view.
I don't know how to move on from that within the show, because it's, you know, it's such a sad moment and so very sudden. But our thoughts go out to the Wainui family, anyone who's known and is friends with Sean, and all the best as you go through this tough time. Moving on from there to other rugby. I'm not sure quite how we do that, but I suppose one of the other big pieces of news this week is Liam Squire. He's decided to move on from a knee injury into the next part of his life, a persistent knee injury. Jipper, a hell of a player too, like a guy with some serious physical nature to him. He brought a lot to the All Black jersey and a lot to the Highlanders jersey.
Oh, absolutely did. And even his time with his Chiefs, he was really effective, and we know how he loved playing for the Mako as well. So everywhere he's gone, he's definitely been one of the better players. And not only was he that enforcer, I think the beauty of Liam is that he could go between those games. He had some real X factor about him. He had that turn of pace, that sort of explosive athlete skill set. And he knew when to, you know, do the tight stuff, but also could show his wares out on that edge. And as we know, the sixth jersey in the All Blacks is always a big enforcer role. And he certainly left no stone unturned when he wore that black six and every other jersey that he wore before getting to that level.
And he was a hell of an athlete too. There's a couple of memories I have of him playing for the All Blacks. I think particularly in Sydney one year, it might have been 2016 or 2017, him flying down the left-hand side, Brent. He was a guy who actually had a fair bit of toe.
He did. He made me look silly a few times as well. We joke around this podcast with Artie Sevier and how many nightmares I have. Before Artie, there was Liam. So, for me, who was just really explosive. We talk around his attacking ability, and like you said, Ross, an open, especially on the edge plays, and being able to get free-flowing ball and being able to build up a bit of speed with how much a bit of turn of pace he did have. It was his physical side for me that I thought was a massive difference. We talk about the enforcer with what Jerome Kino brought to the jersey and Jerry Collins around that enforcer, that number six role. Liam Squire fitted right into that, and you know, there were a lot of injuries due to how physical and his kind of mindset when it came to the defensive side of the ball, because you know, every time he put a shoulder on or tried to hit somebody, you really felt it, and you kind of knew going into a game that you'd have to watch out with both ways, looking both ways, knowing if Liam Squire was what was around there because of his defensive mindset and how physical he was. So a really great man, a great man that played a lot of great rugby for two teams, obviously with the All Blacks and then again with the Highlanders, who, you know, he obviously came back because how much love he has for that club. And, you know, we know as well how much he loves the Marcos and being able to put on that Tasman jersey. So, definitely a play that's going to be well celebrated, and, you know, looking forward to seeing what his future looks like moving forward, because he had such a great rugby career at the Highlanders and the All Blacks.
Yeah, and there is a hole there at the number six jersey, because he seemed to have a hold in it for a couple of years before the injuries came in. Who is that person? Is it Shannon Frizzell coming back into this side, probably maybe to play the United States this weekend, Jipper? That is the guy at the moment who could be there. Is it your boy Akira? Like, who has this long-term jersey?
Well, I think you have to say it's in Akira's own destiny at the moment, isn't it? He's performed extremely well. Not only people sort of just think about this season, but, you know, he had a really strong finish to last season as well, which gave him first rights, I suppose, to the jersey, you know, this year. And he's continued that on with even better performances and some career best form in the All Black jersey. So he's definitely a front runner. But as we always say, with this loose forward trio, don't think there's ever a chance that you can sit back and relax, because there is so much, you know, I suppose, energy from the people behind you wanting to sniff in the same jersey. Shannon Frizzell won. Ethan Blackadder, we all know what he's done. Dalton Papali'i can play all three. Artie Savia can go there with Sam Kane coming back. So it will be a hotly contested jersey at six, but I think it's going to be hotly contested six, seven, and eight. So whoever gets the opportunity, I suppose that's the biggest way to look at it, is if you're wearing it that week, you can only add to your situation, or you can give other guys opportunities. So I think every training counts, but every opportunity in that black six is going to be huge for moving into next season. But when they get into next season, I think they'll be wanting to sharpen down and have a real clear picture of who's going to be the predominant selection in that six building into 2023.
That probably stands as the big thing about this USA game for All Blacks fans, probably because the result is obviously a foregone conclusion. Bruno, when you look at this weekend, the prospect of Sam Whitelock playing again, the prospect of Dane Coles playing again, possibly of Shannon Frizzell, it is that opportunity to show your wares this weekend, isn't it?
Geez, those names are exciting, isn't it? Considering, you know, they haven't played, it just comes back to the depth that we do have. And so, yeah, it is. It's a great opportunity for those guys to be able to play. And like you said, a lot of men have played really well consistently around the Rugby Championship and getting some really good minutes at, and some guys haven't. You know, you look at the guys like Finlay Christie, you know, Quintipau, who played really well in that Tongan game and then made a really good steal in the game when he came off the bench. And so it's been able to give those guys opportunities to be able to play in a meaningful game. And so that USA game for the likes of Dane Coles, Sam Whitelock, who haven't played a lot of rugby, Bunnings NPC, they can come on and play an international game before going into the Northern Hemisphere. So I think it's a really good time for those guys. They are going to get opportunities, from what all words or accounts going to be, is that it's going to be a fresh squad and guys are going to be given opportunities. But I think you've got to take that opportunity as well, because there's just so much depth within the squad. And if you don't take your opportunity with what it is, then you're probably not going to get another opportunity in a big test match that there are at the back end of this Northern Hemisphere tour. So a lot of competition, a lot of opportunity, and that's probably a great thing going into the American game, that guys are going to get that. But then I think as well, overall for the All Blacks team as well, like we've said, people are going to think it's a foregone conclusion, and you know, you'd like to think that the All Blacks will win that game convincingly. But you know, for me, it's more so you look at that Tongan game when they played the Tongan team, and I see Jip smiling there. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself there, but you know, I'm just going to be honest with what I'm thinking around that, because look, the Americans haven't beaten the New Zealanders. They are going to play in America, but my expectation is that they're going to win comfortably. And so for me, moving forward, is how can they do that? You look at the Tongan experience they had. They didn't let them have a lot of momentum. So when they don't have momentum, they're not always going to have it. For the majority of their game, they could. But I guess for the All Blacks and how ruthless and how clinical they want to be, it's been able to stunt the growth of the Americans of when they do have the momentum. And so, you know, it could be a 100 points game, it could be a 70 points game, or it could be real, you know, 20 points game, or it could be close, who knows what it is. But I think for the All Blacks, that ruthlessness around executing what we can, but then stunting the momentum of the Americans when they do have it, and then being able to pounce and being able to turn it to their own momentum and in their own favour moving forward.
You see big pictures of Bryn Hall on the wall of the Eagles dressing room now.
I do have to I tend to agree with you, Bryn, and I think that the Tongan test match is actually a perfect example of probably what they expect, and it's the clinical nature. If you look through the Rugby Championship, in the first 30 minutes of most of their games, they had plenty of opportunities, but their skill execution or error rate was quite high, and they didn't capitalize on the amount of possession and pressure they had into points. I know they won the Rugby Champions, but the All Blacks have such high standards on themselves. Those are the sort of things they'll be looking at. So I think that the set piece will be a big area that they focus on. Your breakdown stats around your lightning quick ball and your effectiveness to get bodies to ground and allow you opportunities to get turnovers. And their defense has been really hard to break down for tries, but where they probably have pushed the boundary too far is the penalties, and that's let teams like South Africa stay in touch through that Rugby Championship. So probably decreasing the amount of penalties, being really clinical in those key attacking stats. And look, we spoke about when they played Tonga, how a lot of people said it was unfair, but you have to look at how hard that actually is to, I suppose, implement that sort of high skill level and that ruthless nature for such a long period. And that was, people say it looks like a training run. Well, sometimes you can't even do that at training against no opposition. And they did it against a motivated Tongan side. So a performance like that is definitely what they'll be looking for. They won't be focused on score lines. They'll be shaping their tour up in some key statistic areas that they probably didn't quite nail as much as they'd like in that rugby championship going into a big Northern tour.
And Brent, I think one thing that they probably learned last time they went to the United States, when they were in Chicago and the Cubs were playing and the Blackhawks were playing and the Bulls were playing and there are all these distractions, they probably learned that now when they go there, they've got to put that to the side because they got probably too involved in that. And that could be a good thing for the way that they approach this week.
Yeah, it is. But I think at the same time, it's been able to be enjoy that you're over there and not kind of shying away from it. It's embracing the fact that, a lot of those guys wouldn't have been able to be in America just due to the fact that the COVID situation and what's happening. So I think a lot of those boys will be really excited to be able to play. A lot of those guys love watching the NFL and I love American sports and being able to be in those kind of stadiums to participate in a test match. It's only going to add fuel to them. So I think they will be really clear and have an understanding that, yes, there are going to be distractions, but the All Blacks are pretty clear and have a great mental skills coach around being able to help them around that. They've got a great leadership group and a great coaching staff to be able to, say we're here for a job. They'll get that done. But at the same time, you got to enjoy yourself and be surrounded with what's going to be going. You're in a great part of the world. So I think they will get their eye and I think they will make the learnings of the test match you did say, Ross. But I think at the same time, it's embracing the chance to play in a different part of the world. A lot of guys love that kind of NFL, NBA kind of those kind of sports and games. So I think they'll get that right, and I don't see it being a problem coming this weekend.
I'm not too sure if they'll get the chance because with the COVID protocols, I'm pretty sure they've got to be hotel bound and training pitch brown. So they might be watching that American sport from TV.
It'd be particularly tough for Brad Weber, I would imagine.
Yeah, as Brent said, they all love it. They all love it. But I'm not too sure. It might not be the case in Washington, but I know that the COVID protocols are pretty strict.
Yeah. Now, speaking of strict and decision-making and discipline, as you mentioned before, Brodie Retallick talked about decision-making both on attack and at set piece as being major talking points for the All Blacks and a major improvement that's required during this tour. Is he spot on the money there, Jipper?
Oh, look, I think, they would have seen some key lineouts, not only in that last test match, but across where they went to the corner and didn't quite execute. And we know how ruthless, I suppose, All Black squads are on when they get into that 22-metre area not to have, white line fever as such and be able to execute and get their five-pointer when they decide to go to the corner. So I'd say that's what he means in terms of making sure they nail their attack line. I thought their scrum was really strong throughout. Again, very high standards, so that they'll no doubt have some work-ons in that area, but I think set piece with guys like Sam Whitelock coming back into the team, you'll see a noticeable difference in their accuracy and I suppose their line-out variation options and his ability to call space. It's so much harder than it looks for line-out callers to manipulate the defence to find that space and clear air for the hooker to throw in and the guys to jump into, and he is just an absolute master of it. And having him back in and around the environment will be crucial to that. And then on attack, I suppose they're more alluding to, the option taken in that last test around that rush defense. We've heard it before. They were effective in parts with kicks across the field and being able to get some bends on the edge when they get outside that rush D. But then we spoke about it in prior podcasts around when they had to turn back into guys like Marks and Co. to be tackled and then turned over in key situations. So I'm sure that's what Brodie will be getting at and making sure they get back to that, real physical, clinical nature around the breakdown. Because before that last South African test, we really spoke about what a growth that was in the All Black forward pack and from last season to this season and their dominance and around that breakdown to provide the attacking opportunities for the guys out in the back line. And they'll be looking to just bring that back in spades and keep it simple. When you keep footy simple, and you bring physicality, the opportunities present themselves because you provide yourself time to make the better choices.
Now, Bryn, looking at this roster over the next few weeks, or roster and schedule for the All Blacks over the next few weeks, we've got the USA, we've got a Welsh team that's depleted, we've got that return to Dublin, which is always the big one, Italy, and finishing off in France. You know, when you look at these test matches, which one of these is the real biggie?
Oh, for me, it's that France game. Yeah, that's going to be the one for me. I think, you know, we got a real lucky in that kind of Australian series. We've got a chance to see a French team with actually not a lot of guys that they wanted there, and they brought in a pretty inexperienced side and did really, really well, considering that, you know, it's a long trip for them, and traditionally they don't travel too well. So, and I think just with the growth and how their game is going, you know, we talked around Dupont and, you know, the players around those kind of players that we haven't seen and been able to play them in France. It's going to be, I can imagine that the All Blacks coaching staff and management and players will be replicating that, trying to get that replication of at a Rugby World Cup, because it's a great opportunity to be over in Europe, and, you know, they won't waste any time around what that might look like for them, because they are going to play France. You can replicate it, so you know, a week of what it might be in a World Cup quarter final, pool play, a final, or whatever, and you can kind of plan out your week or plan your training days for what that might look like. So I think the preparation side will be great for them, playing their week of France, and then the rugby itself, a French team that we've been really excited around, especially with how they're playing their attacking flair, and bringing that flair back there, which we're used to be seeing, and especially a lot of those players as well that we hopefully get to see in the next coming weeks, because I'm really excited to see where the French rugby has come due to their under-20s program and the success that they've had there, and the growth and the development of those young players are now coming into that French side, and it's going to be a great opportunity to see them in their backyard, and something that hopefully the All Blacks can replicate and use that preparation like they would play in a Rugby World Cup in a couple of years' time.
A few, Jipper?
Oh, look, as you know, Ross, I'm a bit of a codehead, so I could find an angle for any test match for getting excited. But look, it is the French one. I think everyone's hanging out for that. But I think with what's happened over the last number of years around the Irish test matches, I think that poses quite a lot of excitement. Obviously Joe Schmidt's not there anymore, and he seemed to have a knack for breaking down All Black defences and providing the Irish opportunities to win test matches. So no doubt it will be another tight fought test, but you know, the French one sticks out for me. But I'm certainly excited for the Irish test and to the Welsh. I know they're missing a few players, but they are rugby mad. Like their fans just expect them to lift against the All Blacks, and as do most oppositions. So, you know, those three tests are all going to be exciting build-ups for me, and looking forward to watching them.
You look at the set, if you're looking at the Northern Hemisphere teams, and you're looking at, you know, Wales, France and Ireland, you know, you look at around the success that the South Africans played, you know, the kicking game, and even to the second test, they ran a little bit more. But if you're thinking around a work on possibly as well that the All Blacks continue to get a little bit better on, was the high ball work and being able to escort and being able to win the ball in that contestable mindset, because it's probably going to come, it's a little bit more apparent in that Northern Hemisphere style, and the number nines are really where we've talked around Conor Murray, and then we've talked around the Welsh and Dupont and their kicking game, being able to put it on a dime. And so, you know, can the All Blacks continue to keep evolving and keep learning and being able to win those moments? And yeah, we probably look at the South Africans at times in the two test matches, they actually won a lot of those aerial balls. So I can imagine that Fozzie and the coaching staff and the back three unit will be able to, you know, we'll be talking around how we continue to keep getting better in that department, because in that Northern Hemisphere style, it's going to be coming. So it's going to be really interesting to see if they're going to make those adjustments that they didn't quite.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Get right in the South African series.
Don't underestimate a Kiwi coach. Like Wayne will have a plan of how the Welsh are going to play. And I'm really excited also for Gareth Anscombe coming back from a injury to his knee and missing out on that World Cup when he was starting to hit some really good form. So, two sort of Kiwis that could potentially, one could be on the field, driving the team game plan, and the other one, making a plan. He probably made a plan a long time ago, knowing Wayne. So there'll be a few things. They'll chance their arm and they'll have nothing to lose, which makes them a dangerous threat as well.
That's what I love about Wayne. That's what I love about Wayne, Jip, is that, fortunate enough to be coached by him a little bit. He will throw the kitchen sink at the All Blacks and he loves a playing rugby brand of like being able to play a lot. So the fact that they've got some great outside backs and consistent midfielders, his game plan will be expansive. Yes, they will kick at times and that's one of their strengths. But what I really enjoy about Wales and Wayne is knowing that he wants to attack. It's all out attack. So yeah, even though they are going to be depleted, it's going to be a great brand of rugby if they continue to have that expansive style that they have in the last couple of campaigns with the Wayne.
It must be a bit of fun to coach against a team that you probably always wanted to coach yourself. For a guy like Wayne Pivac.
I think so, but it could potentially be a stepping stone for him back here. We've seen so many past coaches come from Wales and come and end up coaching the All Blacks, and knowing Wayne as well, he'll have ambitions to do exactly that. So having success with Wales, similar to, I suppose, Gats has come back to New Zealand to coach the Chiefs, and never know what opportunities could present itself for him back here with New Zealand rugby as well. So he'll be fully focused on what he's in control of now. I just get a little bit excited, like as Bryn said, having been coached by him, he leaves no stone unturned, and he is prepared to put it all out there. He's not someone afraid of going all in.
Speaking of the global game, the Club World Cup is again a talking point, maybe to start in 2024, fellas. Bryn, how do we fit this in?
Well, I'd love for it to fit in because, look, a lot of competitions, you look at soccer and football, they've got a great, the Champions League, the best in the world in Europe, come together and be able to play. So, we have talked around a lot, how can we make it fit? Hopefully there might be a window where we can fit it in, whether it be, for example, June. And, the kind of the things that I had a little look around it, around what that setup might be. And the kind of stuff that I have been hearing is that, the ideal setup would be you'd have the kind of Heineken Cup. You'd have eight teams that qualified for that Heineken Cup setup. And so the eight teams that are the quarterfinalists would be eight teams that are going to be playing in that competition. Then you'd have four from the Super Rugby that make the semifinals in the competition. And you've got two from Japan, and you've got one from the MLR, and then one from SLAR. And it's kind of 16-team. It's a 16-team comp. That was the concept that I read up. So I think it's a great idea because, look, I think we want to keep continuing to grow our game. And, look, how many times have we had chats around, would it be great to see the Blues or the Crusaders go play Toulon or Leinster? Who's the best? Who's the best in the Northern Hemisphere? Who's the best in the Southern Hemisphere? And consistently, as players, we always talk around that. The idea of us, going and play Saracens, in a World Club final and being a competition where we can play those teams and test ourselves and saying, we actually are the best club in the world when we've proven it. And it's just not hearsay. So because there's so many debates around who's the best club, who is the best system or whatever. And this kind of competition is really going to open up that avenue to figure out who the best club in the world is, which for a lot of players, we'd love to know as well. But I think the powers that be, there's so many different competitions. There's so many different powers that be that need to be able to collectively come together and sacrifice, sacrifice and being able to put this to the world stage where we can have all these competitions, grow our product, and then being able to have a competition that is sustainable and being able to then to grow into what a lot of the competitions like the Champions League soccer, for example, which is a great competition, you consider the best in the world.
Is that the right structure, Jipper, do you think?
Oh, look, first off, I think if everyone's motivated enough, the calendar will take care of itself, and I think if everyone sees merit in it and benefit in it, there's no doubt it should happen. You know, from a fan's point of view, from a player's point of view, sponsor's point of view, you know, it ticks a lot of boxes, and adds to a lot of excitement. I suppose in between World Cups, it would be quite a pinnacle event for players to strive to get to. Structure, I don't know. Like, there's always the old adage of, you know, because of the Heineken Cup setup, it finds the best eight, and it doesn't really matter where you're from. Whereas it's quite a hard task for the Southern Hemisphere to do that because, you know, not all playing in the same competition or have something of that effect. So what Bryn outlined makes sense. And I think if we are to grow this game, you've got to give other regions the opportunity to present something to their fan base and something to get behind. So I think that structure would work on that sense as well. And if you're in Super Rugby and you miss out on the top four, yeah, I mean, that is tough and you don't get the opportunity to play at this. But, you know, you've got to weigh that up with opportunities in other markets and making sure that we make this a worldwide game that we can grow its exposure and grow its fan base across the world.
So this is played as a World Cup kind of scenario. All teams go to one country or a couple of countries that are close to each other and play off there for a month or so. Is that how you see it? And maybe a knockout tournament? Because obviously you don't have time for a round robin.
Yeah, I'd say it would be, like Bryn said, probably eight teams, eight, and you go straight to like a quarterfinal sort of, and it'd be seeded based on performance and who you'd play. I don't know the ins and outs and where it's played, or if some come to the Southern Hemisphere and some go to the North based on rankings or whatever. You know, I don't know if it would be all in one spot. I think there'd be a bit of travel involved, and I suppose that's what the powers that be are working through now. As I say, I'm guessing, but those would be some of the logistical issues that would be presenting themselves.
Yeah, that's exciting. It's very exciting.
Oh, yeah. Imagine it from a fan's point of view. Like, it's just be such, like, good quality football, different styles coming. And I actually think it would be great for the growth of players in both hemispheres to face those styles at that level. Because so often we talk when we're reviewing test matches that, oh, you know, that's not the style they used to play in, and, you know, this is the area they've got to work on. Well, it gives them another avenue to get a taste of that. But more importantly, it gives a wider or a larger depth of the playing pool the opportunity to play against those different styles as well.
You look at that as well, Chip. You look as, like, you know, you talk around, so we talk around the Northern and Southern Hemisphere being able to connect and see who's the best. But, you know, that Japan League is really, like, the top two teams, the top four teams that play in those competitions are really good teams. And you like to think, you know, we tried in Super Rugby to get the Sunwolves together, but, you know, for whatever reason, the clubs wouldn't release them. They weren't really the top Japanese team. But, you know, you look at Panasonic and, you know, you look at Suntory. You know, those kind of two teams, have great players. So, you know, if they can connect and be able to put themselves, a really great brand of rugby, into that competition, it just adds to that market as well. Japan is such a great market, and it's a chance for them to be able to test themselves against the best in the world.
Mate, you've got to get a gig up there. I'm telling you, mate. You deserve a gig up there. Give this man a contract. Oh, that is outstanding. I do agree with you, but I know what angle you were playing there, my friend.
Tony Brown angle.
No angles here, mate. Just seen the product for what it is. Beautiful. The Japanese rugby, mate. Love it.
It would fit someone as fit and fresh as you, Bryn. I tell you what, you'd slip right in there at Panasonic.
How's that Japanese of yours, Bryn? You've got a little bit in the arsenal?
No, I don't. 3 years. I don't, actually. But I love the Japanese culture and language, and have been fortunate enough to head over there. So, beautiful country. Beautiful country.
Yeah. Okay.
Mate, this goes straight in there, mate. You're knocking all the right boxes at the moment.
I learned from the guy on my left.
Nice, very, very nice. Speaking of contracts internationally, Christian Leliafano, what a great signing from Moana Pacifica. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's crucial to get some experience in a, I suppose, a startup club, and you know, it's about creating an environment that they really want to create, I suppose, a filter of you know, Pacifica talent. But that's going to take time, and you need to create an environment and systems and values to, I suppose, set the foundation for that work to start. And then, you know, in a number of years' time, they'll see the fruits of that labor that they put in now.
Yeah, you can't just expect them to throw only players without a lot of test experience in there. You need someone to guide that ship, don't you? And as a player who's been through a hell of a lot of adversity, he's the kind of, you know, settled head, Bryn, that they could use.
Oh, yeah, look, anytime you can gain experience of Christian Liliafano, it's so great. It's so massive for the program. And you talk around getting guys to be able to be competitive, getting a guy like that just doesn't give you experience. It's his lifestyle and who he is as a person adds so much to that group. There'll be so much respect as soon as he walks into that building, knowing that, like, what his story is, how he conducts himself. You know, I've been fortunate enough to spend a bit of time with him, and first and foremost, he's just a great man and a great person. So when you've got those kind of attributes, it's just going to be great for your club moving forward. And so it's a great signing for them, and, you know, he's still playing some really good footy. And, you know, even the likes of, like, Ede Inari, who we talked about, said that he might possibly be in there. I watched his game on the weekend against, who did the Hawke's Bay play on the weekend?
Canterbury, mate. They did a Canterbury.
Canterbury, that's right. Sorry, Canterbury, that's right. You know, and so, like, you know, he's been so good in that environment. And so, you know, being able to have a 9 and 10 like that and being able to connect those two together is going to be great for that group moving forward, because anytime you can have a calibre of a player like Christian Liliafano through the experience, you know, even Eddie, who's been in the Crusaders environment, who's been in the academy environment, and he's been able to understand what it takes to be able to play, be a professional rugby player. A lot of those guys aren't going to be in that kind of fold of being used to what professional rugby looks like. It's going to be a lot of guys that possibly might be in that Bunnings NPC or from afar in a distant country. So anytime you can have a calibre of players that, like, Christian Liliafano, Ede Inari bring into that environment, it's only going to make that group and that team that much more better due to the signings like those two.
I wonder what that means for his chances of playing for the Wallabies. It's probably a good chance to force his way back in, Chipper.
Oh, look, I think if he's got ambitions, you know, if Moana Pacifica perform extremely well in Super Rugby, just like Quaid, I think Dave's made it pretty clear. If you're playing well enough, you'll be picked, no matter age, status, or anything. What's best for the Wallabies will be the deciding factor. So I think the more minutes he plays, and if he can put some runs on the board in terms of performances, why not? And as you said, he's faced a lot of adversity throughout his life, so I'm sure he's ambitious to make every post a winner for Moana Pacifica first. But if the byproduct of that is an acknowledgement of a Wallabies jersey, then, you know, so be it.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of getting back in the jersey, not the jersey we're used to him seeing him, but Nonu on the weekend, riding the horse away from East Coast,
yeah.
And having a big win. That was quite something. Bryn, like, just such a legend.
Oh, it's so good to see, and it's just great, you know. When I saw that first post, I knew that he was playing with Jose again. I think they had an agreement that if, you know, Marta was going to play, Jose was going to play. And so, you know, seeing two greats of New Zealand rugby and that kind of Heartland Championship, and especially with the amount of struggle that the club's been through, to get that win first and foremost after so many losses was great. But, you know, for me, the highlight was seeing him on a horse riding out. You know, that just comes back to, you know, you look at Martin Nonu and what he's done in his career, you know, possibly, arguably the best 12 to come through this country and in the world. Has played in different cities, different countries, and played at such a high standard, and then gets to come back and then give back to a community that, you know, that's been struggling results-wise. But anytime you hear about the East Coast, Ngāti Porou, it's been able to see scenes like that. You know, I look back in my day when I was younger, you know, seeing the whole crowd come on with horses rolling around after the game. And so it's just great for Heartland Rugby to know that those kind of scenes and those kind of pitches are still happening. And for a guy that's had so much experience and done so much for New Zealand rugby and on a world stage, to go back to the Heartland rural areas of New Zealand and to see him riding out on a horse, it was a massive highlight for me. And, you know, hopefully we can see more of those scenes in the future.
It was very good. It was very, very good. And, you know, what is he? He's approaching 40 now, and he still looks right at home, doesn't he, Jipper?
Oh, absolutely. His kicking game was exceptional. One kick, it was outstanding. And albeit, you know, it's about Ma'a and him going back, because he's still currently playing. He's come from, obviously, France back here. And I think last time he came back, he represented the Blues and didn't look one bit out of touch. So he's certainly in great rugby condition. But Jose Gear looked great too on the left edge. Some barnstorming run. And that classical running style of his, it was literally like reuniting the old band back together in a hurry. All they needed was a yellow jersey.
And the Hurricanes might be throwing some at them, because I tell you now, they could play good Super Rugby next year, both of those blokes.
Oh yeah, and Martin in particular, I'd say he's still wanted around the globe. What he can add, like, and that just shows how much he still loves the game. You know, he's not looking to have a rest. He's going out and he's playing footy. He's keeping footy fit, and any opportunity he can play with. You know, 30 people on the field, he's up for it, no matter the level, which he's always been like that, hasn't he, though? He's always gone back to club rugby. Yeah. He's never, ever, I suppose, not delivered at every level when you know, throughout his time, even as an AB. And, you know, Jerry Collins is the same. They just love playing footy. And it was great to see. And he certainly would not look out of place at Super Rugby. I have no doubt about that.
To go left field again, and because we haven't spoken NRL with Jipper now for at least a couple of weeks, so he's probably getting some sort of PTSD out of it. Benji Marshall, you both played with him when he was at the Blues. He's retired. What are your memories? Let's start with you, Bryn. Your memories of Benji, the stature he brought to that side, and the way he handled rugby.
Oh, I'll never forget. I think, Jip, you can probably attest this as well. You know, we usually have our... During first days of preseason, you always have your yo-yo test and your bronco test. I've never seen so many cameras for a yo-yo test ever in my life. And so it kind of just came to the magnitude of what Benji was at that time. And, you know, we were fortunate enough that he signed at the Blues at that time. And he was really open, man. He was really open and real honest around his journey. Look, he probably didn't succeed in the way he wanted to do, but, you know, he was pretty open around there, knowing that, you know, I've transitioned from rugby league into rugby, and I am struggling a little bit. But he was always open and wanting to know, and kind of had that growth mindset that I talked a little bit earlier with some players, that was Benji to a T. He knew that his weaknesses, and he'd be very open to the coaches, playing staff, playing group, and saying, like, hey, look, I just need this a little bit of help, or like, what does this look like, when it comes to rugby preparation. And so, and at the same time, he was a great guy. Jip can probably attest this, and he might have his own stories around it, but, you know, he was always a guy you could feel very approachable to. It was great for our young guys, great for the young guys coming through. You know, I was young at that time, and, you know, for someone that had given so much to the rugby league, and we all knew, as like, you know, at that time, how much of a big star he was never too big for us. He never had an ego. He put his ego aside. Never had an ego. And so when you can talk to a guy like that kind of stature, comes back to his upbringing and how of a great person he was. So I had great memories of only a short time, but, you know, what a great career. And I know Jip loves his league, and so he'll be able to continue on that a little bit more. But for me, a world-class person first and foremost, and then a great rugby league player, and very fortunate that I was able to spend a bit of time with him during that time at the Blues.
Yeah, well, I mean, he touched me so deeply, Bryn. I managed to bring the NRL and rugby union together with a flick pass against Canterbury behind my back, similar to himself, to Matt Duffy. So, you know, it was, one of my big motivations was to pay tribute to him while I was still playing. So I managed to do that, which is great. In all seriousness, one thing that surprised me the most is not his running fitness. We went to Ludus Magnus once, and it's like a body weight circuit gym, like ruthless sort of crawling and all sorts of, I suppose, fitness testers or gut busters. And I remember he finished about 15 or 20 minutes before everyone else, and it was his up off the ground fitness. You know how the NRL, they've always got to backtrack 10 meters, and he was just incredible. Like, all the body weight stuff and crawling and all that, he just absolutely demoed it. And I said to him afterwards, I said, how do you get so fit at that? And he's like, mate, that's all we do in the NRL. It's like that wrestling. They do the wrestle. They always go in the back, the 10. So they're so used to that, I suppose, that physical up off the ground burpee style sort of fitness, which surprised me. And then, you know, although he left early, if you look at some of his highlights for the Blues, he was pretty exceptional, especially on that South African tour. He set up some beautiful tries and scored one himself against the Lions, and had his moments even when he came off the bench against the Highlanders. So he certainly had a skill set. It was just, I suppose, not the right fit for him, and he had an opportunity to go back to NRL, and he's still played a grand final this year, so it shows he still had plenty to offer that game as well.
Enduring. Players are becoming better and better at enduring long careers, aren't they? The way that they're looking after their bodies. You look at you look at Brad Thorne, you look at Stephen Donald even, you look at Benji Marshall. A 20-year career is not off the cards.
I think that's sports science. I think sports science has really improved and enabled players to know their bodies really well, and I suppose this individual approach to weeks to get the best out of you on the weekend has really come through in the S&C space, and they're getting the rewards from it because the balance and the knowledge of the player are being considered when constructing these programs for them to get the very best, because that's what everyone wants, isn't it? Everyone at the table wants the very best version of the players they're putting money and time into, and I suppose that collaboration and the growth in that sports science area of how to have that longevity, how to keep everything twitching at a fast level so that you can still perform at the highest stage has been a big factor.
Yeah, I definitely reckon that's changed over the years, Jip, that individualizing your program to like you as the individual. I think early in my career, a little bit, on probably even to your extent, Jip, as well, early in your career, preseason was pretty much, you didn't touch a ball. Well, even more so in your era, Jip, when you started, when you first came in, you didn't touch a rugby ball from November to January. To the start of January, you know what I mean? Yeah. So all it was considered is like, all right, just mentally, it's real old school around, all right, we're going to try mentally break, we're going to do as much running with it. In hindsight, was probably a detriment to lower tissue injuries in the long run, So I think the growth around sports science and being able to look after the individual and saying what the individual needs are, whether that's been bigger, you're trying to get a little bit, put more size on, so you're not going to run as much, or vice versa, and being able to be a little bit more individualized. I think the S&C staff and the understanding of GPS, heart rate monitor, and understanding where you are on the field and how tired you are, how fatigued you are, and recording those kind of results, it's leading to then being able to get you're more effective in trainings and when you are playing. And it's coming now. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, you look at Tom Brady. He's obviously an outlier where, he could probably play till he's 50, 55. But, those kind of ideas around, making what's the best for you and what's going to get you to play more and being able to get the best out of you moving forward is a really individualized approach. And I think S&C staff and rugby has got a lot better in that department.
And that's a good place to wrap the show for this week. Another Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Before we go, I'd like to once again reiterate our thoughts are going out to the family of Sean Wainui. All the best to you all, and all the best to his friends as well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.